Last weekend, we began a series that we're calling Ethos, a very important series for us. And Ethos, the whole idea behind Ethos is that it is a series about our uniqueness as a church community. You know, what it is that sets us apart, makes us different. You know, what it is that really defines who we are and what we are. And so what we're doing is each weekend we are going to be honing in on a word or a phrase that I think not only captures our ethos, but that also points us forward, that points us to where we believe God is calling us as a community to go. Well, today what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at the first value, I guess we could call these, our first value, and it's one that we are very simply calling goodness and beauty. Would you say that with me? Goodness. When I was a kid, my dad, he had a subscription to National Geographic magazine. How many of you grew up with National Geographic? Yeah, I don't know about you, but I always absolutely loved National Geographic magazine, okay? And no, it wasn't for the same reason some of you did when you were in junior high. I remember though every month, you know, when National Geographic would show up in the mailbox, I'd get so excited. You know, it had the brown, like that brown wrapper on it, you know, and I can remember literally spending hours being so drawn to these photos and these images of people and places and animals and, you know, tribes and faraway lands and all these things. And I would just be intrigued. And I hated the maps, because the maps, you know, once you unfold those, you're completely screwed. There is no possible way you're going to get those put back together again. Always drove my dad nuts, okay? But anyway, but I remember being so drawn in and being so intrigued by the absolute beauty of what I was seeing. You know, I think there is something in all of us that is drawn to goodness. I think there's something in all of us that's drawn to things of beauty. I think there's a part in all of us that when we see goodness and when we see beauty, there's this part of us that wants to recognize it, that wants to affirm it, that wants to take notice and affirm that it is indeed good, that it is indeed beautiful. And I don't think that's just a coincidence. I think there's a real good reason for that. In fact, what I think that points us to is to creation. As a matter of fact, if you go back to the very beginning of the Bible, very first book of the Bible, which is what? Someone say Revelation? That'd be a very interesting beginning, wouldn't it? But anyway, if you go back to Genesis, what we find is the story of God's beautiful creation. But what we also see in the midst of all of this, we see a pattern. And the pattern that we see is a pattern that we believe is very important for us today here at the Orchard in 2012. Here's what that pattern looks like. All right, it's very simple. God spoke, creation occurred. And then as God saw the beauty of his creation, he affirmed it. He blessed it by declaring it to be good. That's the pattern. We see it over and over and over again. I mean, think about this. God speaks. He creates the sky. He creates the land, the vegetation, the plants and the trees and the creatures of the air and the birds in the sea. And each time throughout all of this creation, each time he looks over that creation and he declares it to be good. And then when you get to the very end of Genesis chapter 1, this pattern sort of culminates in this one passage that I want us to look at. I want us to read it together. Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. All right, can we read it together? Let's go. Then God looked over all he had made, and he saw that it was very good. God looked over all he had made, and he saw that it was very good. You may have heard the phrase that some theologians have used over the years, original sin. This is what I like to call original blessing. Original blessing. Now, the fact that God would declare his creation to be good really shouldn't surprise us because, I mean, after all, why would God look at what he's created any differently, right? God does not create ugly, right? I mean, we might think there's some things we see, we might think it's ugly, but I don't think God necessarily sees it that way, you know? Just like our children, right? your children, I might think they're ugly. No, I probably don't. Okay. I mean, let's just be honest about this now, okay? To you, your children are like the most beautiful thing in the world. Not necessarily to everyone, I'm just saying, all right? Including mine, okay? But anyway, I'm digging myself a pit and I'm having a hard time climbing out of it. But anyway, no, think about this though. Why would God look at his creation any differently? I mean, God is good, right? God is good. He is only good. James, New Testament writer, he says it this way, every good gift, every perfect gift is from above. G.K. Chesterton, he said this one time, I thought it was really good. God is not a symbol of goodness. Goodness is a symbol of God. Sometimes people say God is good. I wonder maybe if we should flip that and we should switch it around to just say good is God. You know, it's like whenever we encounter goodness, we are, I think in some way, we are seeing something that points us to the essence of who God is. You know, same thing with beauty, right? Beautiful is not necessarily a descriptor of God as much as the fact that God is beauty, period. And so whenever we see something beautiful, in some way, what we're seeing is pointing us back to the essence of who God is. DeWitt Jones is, here's a picture of him. He's a photographer who, ironically enough, takes photos for National Geographic. And DeWitt, if you know anything about him, he's a real famous guy. And DeWitt has traveled literally all over the world and has captured and told extraordinary stories through his photography. Here's a few of his most famous. You might recognize some of these. But one of the things that DeWitt talks about is how drawn he was to the vision of National Geographic. And I want to quote him, okay? It's pretty intriguing what he says here. He talks about the vision of National Geographic, and he says this, what they charged me with every time they sent me out was to celebrate what was right with the world rather than wallow in what was wrong with it. Isn't that good? To celebrate what was right with the world rather than wallow in what was wrong with it. And DeWitt, he tells this story that I just read this past week that I thought was really interesting. And it's a story about one of his most famous photographs that he's taken. And I want to read to you in his own words what he said about this. He says, I remember one time they sent me out to the Selkirk Mountains of British Columbia. I came upon this great field of dandelions. But I just wasn't into it. And I started to say, well, the light isn't right. I'll come back tomorrow. We've all been there. It happens all the time. At home, at work. He says, I just can't get into it. I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow turns into next week. And by the time I got back there, no more dandelions. Instead, I had puffballs. This was not the way I planned it. And I was just about to leave when a little voice inside of me said, come on, DeWitt. What's here to celebrate? I know it wasn't how you planned it, but what's right with the situation? Where are the possibilities? He says, before I knew it, I was into puffballs. 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 Over the puffballs, at eye level with the puffballs, under the puffballs, looking at them from every angle until, and this is the photo right here that he walked away with. And he says, this is what I found. It was there. And he says, it seemed it was always there if I was open enough to see it. The response that we see in Genesis 1 of God the Creator, that he has towards his beautiful and good creation. Listen, we believe that this sets the tone for what our response ought to be as well when it comes to the goodness and beauty that is all around us. And what is that response? Well, that response is very simple. It's three things. I mean, it sounds simple anyway, but it's really three things. First of all, that we should be people who actively and intentionally observe, seek out, and look for the goodness and beauty that is around us every day. That we should be people who observe. Would you say that word with me? Observe. Along with that, we should also seek to be people who affirm and bless and call out that goodness and beauty. We affirm. Say that word. Affirm. And then not only are we called to be people who see and go out of our way to observe beauty and goodness, but we should also be people who affirm it. But then in addition to all of that, we also believe that every one of us, every one of us should seek to be people who create goodness and beauty through whatever it is we do in our lives. Now, there are times when finding and observing beauty is easier than it is other times. Right? There are times that observing goodness and beauty, well, it just doesn't require a whole lot of effort on our part. You know, there's times when it's very blatant, isn't it? The beauty is just very obvious. You know, here's a photo. When we were in Thailand, we were out in the Gulf of Thailand, and you know, you come across something like this, and no one's gonna sit there and argue, right? No, I don't know. It's not that beautiful. I wouldn't want to be near that. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole, you know. Here's another one. A couple weeks ago, I was in Wisconsin. Check that out. Isn't that beautiful? Here's a couple other. There's certain, you know, pieces of art you come across that you just look at and you know this is beauty. This is good, right? Same thing with some of the images you see from like, the Hubble telescope, right? Absolutely beautiful. If you've ever gone on a trip to Hawaii, it doesn't take that long to start going, ooh, oh, ah, wow, that's good, that's beautiful, right? I mean, you're surrounded by it. But what about those times when you are surrounded by this? Or this? What about those times when you're surrounded by something like this? Sometimes beauty is not quite as blatant as we'd like it to be. Sometimes beauty is very, very difficult to observe. Many of you, you've heard me talk about how when I moved back here to work at the Orchard, how badly I struggled to find and observe beauty right here in our city, Aurora. And for a long time, I struggled to not only observe beauty, but I even struggled to even want to sometimes even be near our city. There were times that I would intentionally choose to drive around our city. There'd be times that people would ask me where I'm from, and I didn't want to say Aurora. And so I would say Chicago. It was a real struggle for me to find beauty and goodness in our city. And yet, here was the struggle. I knew that God had called the Orchard to be a church that was going to love and bless our city. But I also knew that there was no way that I was going to be able to lead our church into actually doing that if I did not have love for the city. You know, and finally I got so fed up and I got so I don't know, I didn't know what to do. And so, because on one hand, I felt like this city deserved a church that really was going to love it. But what I knew is it was going to take a church who, and this church, I believe, deserved to have a leader who was going to be able to lead them in loving and leading them into doing that. And so I got to that place where I was really desperate, and I prayed a prayer that I was really serious about, and it was basically this. I asked God to do one of two things. I said, God, would you let me leave? And would you let me go somewhere where my heart can connect? Because I'm tired of hearing, you know, I'd hear my friends who are planting churches in other cities. They talk about how much they love their city. Oh, we're going to Austin. Ooh, I love my city. We're going to Seattle. Oh, I love my city. Oh, we're going, you know, they in New York and all this stuff. And I remember it got to a point where I didn't even want to hear it anymore. And so I prayed. I said, God, would you let me leave? Let me go somewhere that I actually want to be. Or change my heart. Like rip off my glasses and give me a new pair by which I can see the city in a way that I've never been able to see it before. Well, around that same time, I went out to California, which is really not a good place to visit when you've just prayed a prayer like that. But I went out to see a friend of mine, one of my mentors, Dave Gibbons. You guys know Dave, and I was sharing with him what I was feeling, and I'll never forget, we were sitting in this Asian bakery and having breakfast, and I remember just telling him what I was feeling and sensing, and he just listened like he does so well, and he looked at me with that Dave Gibbons look. And he said something so simple to me, simple advice. He said, Scott, go home and walk your city. Just walk it. See what happens. He didn't say drive through the city. He said walk. Just get out of your car. Just walk your city. And so I began doing that. Parked my car. Began walking along the sidewalks. I began walking down alleyways and walking different streets than I was used to seeing. And can I tell you that as I began doing that, something really deep began to happen inside of me. And I began to see a city that I thought I knew. I began to see a city that I thought I was very familiar with from a different perspective. I began seeing it from different angles. I began to see things that I'd looked at thousands of times, but because I was not driving by fast and focused on where I was going, and because I was walking and looking at things from different angles, I began to see beauty that I had no idea even existed. And there was something about allowing my feet just to touch the ground. There was something about allowing my eyes to see things from different angles. There was something about allowing my nose to smell, my ears to listen to what the city was saying to me. There was something in all of that that God began using to answer what was a really honest and desperate prayer. And little by little, God began helping me to find beauty in this place that, man, for 30 plus years, I hadn't seen it. I'd missed it. Sometimes it's hard, I think, to see beauty in those things that we are most familiar with. You know, whether it's the places we live, or whether it's even sometimes with the people that we love. And you know, it's so ironic, because oftentimes what happens is, like, when you're removed from it, or when whatever that is, if it's ever taken away from you, you know what happens? You quickly realize that the beauty and the goodness, it was there. It was there all along. This is a photo that some of you have seen before. It's one I took in 2009 when I was on a trip to Uganda. And it's a house that's owned by a man that I met. His name is Moses. I'm pretty sure that like 60% of the men I met in Uganda, their names were Moses and John. Biblical names, a lot of biblical names. But this house here that you're looking at, this is a house that's pretty typical for this area. We were in the capital city of Kampala. And in fact, this house really was one of the better ones, believe it or not, in this area where we were at. And we had spent a few days there. And one afternoon in particular, we were visiting one of the poorest areas of the city. Here's a couple other photos of it. And it had a really deep impact on me. It was very overwhelming. And it really was one of the most awful places I could have ever imagined being in. And it was, and you just can't even capture it on photo, you know. But I'll never forget, like, this area. I mean, it was in this area that was filled with, I mean, disease, HIV, extreme poverty, unclean water. I mean, here's a picture. This one is, this is where they would go and get their water, you know, out of here when it was available. And it was in the midst of all of this, standing there and just being extremely overwhelmed. I remember I had these Converse on, and looking down at my Converse, and just, I went back to my hotel that day, and I sat and I stared at my Converse and wept, because I realized like what I paid for my Converse was more than what these people see in months or even a year or more. But it was in the midst of all of this brokenness and this mess and this what seems very ugly that I was reminded of how sometimes beauty can actually sneak up on you. And it can show up when you least expect it. Because it was right in the middle of all of this where I'm standing there feeling overwhelmed, overwhelmed. I don't even know what other word to say, but in the midst of all of this, all of a sudden I hear the sound of, well, gosh, it sounded like one of my daughters giggling and laughing. And I turn around, and there was this little angel that was looking at me with the biggest eyes. And I don't know where she got it from, but I'll tell you, like, her outfit looked like she just walked out of, like, you know, Fox Valley Mall. And I don't know why she was drawn to me. I don't know, maybe she heard that I was the Mzungu. I was the white man who had a bag full of suckers in his backpack or something. I don't know. But it was the strangest thing because I felt like that I was in that moment looking at something that did not belong where I was standing. But I'm so glad she was there. This was such a beautiful moment for me. It felt, you know what it felt like? It felt like a gift to me in the midst of a very broken place, in the midst of feeling very overwhelmed, in a place that was full of poverty and pain. And yet right in the middle of this is the beauty of her smile and her silliness and just the goodness of being a child. Beauty can be found anywhere. And yes, sometimes you have to dig for it. Sometimes you have to search for it. And sometimes it'll even take you by surprise. But you know, oftentimes I think being people who observe goodness and beauty, I think it just simply means not even the amount of work we think it might. I think oftentimes it means just simply opening ourselves to it. You know, it means using our senses, opening our eyes, walking with our feet, and seeking out those things that are good and beautiful in nature, in art, in humanity, in culture. It's all around us. Now, it's not always easy because so many of us, we become conditioned, I think, to look for all the things that are wrong and messed up with the world. You know, it's no wonder because if you think about, like, we're surrounded all the time by so much negativity, right? So much of our news and articles and websites and conversations and, I mean, on down the list, they just feed off of a broken world, don't they? They feed off brokenness. They feed off failure. They feed off of it. So for a lot of people, it's become their default posture. You know, it's become easier for them to be cynical and critical and to complain and to point out all the things that are wrong with the world than it is for them to observe and celebrate and affirm and to declare what's right, what's good, and what's beautiful. Robert Louis Stevenson has this great quote. To know what you prefer, instead of humbly saying amen to what the world tells you you ought to prefer, is to have kept your soul alive. There's this little exercise that I've been trying, because I'm really working at this. I mean, I just sometimes, right when you think that like you're making progress, then all of a sudden you have an interaction. Or something happens and you realize you've still got a long way to go. So one of the things I've been doing here and there, not as consistently as I'd like, but there's this little exercise that when I'm in maybe traffic or when I'm in waiting for an appointment or whatever it might be, I will just observe the people around me. And oftentimes what we do is we start telling ourselves some sort of story. We don't even realize we're doing that, but we tell ourselves stories, right? And so what I'll do is I'll just sit and I'll just glance at them. Not in a weird like way, like they're like, what's going on with this guy? But here's what I'll try to do. Like I'll try to look past their ethnicity. I'll try to look past their, or look beyond at least, their appearance or even whatever it was they might have just done. And what I'll try to do is tell myself stories about them that connect my heart to the goodness of their humanity. And so, like, the other day I was sitting somewhere and this man came up and he totally just walked right in front of me. And, you know, I found myself getting agitated in that moment. But I caught myself and I stopped, and what I did was I imagined this man. I don't even know his story, I don't know anything about him, but I told myself the story that he is a single father who's in a hurry and he's overwhelmed and he can't wait to get home to just sit and cuddle with one of his children. Okay. Go ahead. There was a mother one time who looked so unhappy and she was so cranky and, you know, but I imagine this woman sitting at home and weeping because one of her children has disconnected from her. She longs to have that connection again. Teenager one time who I tried to imagine underneath the facade of his coolness was desperately seeking affirmation and love. Sometimes I think we just have to start telling ourselves a different story because the wrong stories just come so quickly. And they're the stories that pull us away from the humanity of a person. And instead they point us to the labels, the stereotypes, the prejudices. So back to Genesis 1, God looked over all he had made and he saw that it was very good. So we don't just observe this beauty, but we find ways, I think, to affirm and to call out and to bless that goodness and beauty when we see it. There's this American poet, his name is Galway Connell, and he writes about the great St. Francis of Assisi, and I love St. Francis of Assisi, one of my favorites. But in one of his poems, he writes about St. Francis, and he describes St. Francis as someone who, and I'll put it on the screen, someone who reteaches things their loveliness. Just focus right now. Like I am. So anyway, the title of his poem that he talks about St. Francis is called St. Francis and the Sow, Pig. And in it, St. Francis basically tells this big female pig through his words, through his touch and through his blessing that she is indeed beautiful, even though she doesn't know it. That hit me. And I thought, what if we were to be like, or to become like mirrors like that? And not just for nature, but what about for one another? Like, what if we were to become mirrors that show people the truth of their goodness and beauty? I mean, especially for those who can't see their goodness and beauty. Some of you, you struggle to see that every day. What about those who hate themselves? Those who, I don't know, who've been abused? Those who've been imprisoned? Those who think that they're no good, who they've been discriminated against. What if we, Orchard, listen, what if we understood and embraced the fact that it is us who must affirm, and in the words of this poet, that we must be people who reteach all things their loveliness? What if we became about that? Before we went to Thailand, we had to teach our kids some things about etiquette. And one of those things we taught them was how you greet people in Thailand, because they do it a little differently than here. Fist bumps don't go over in Thailand as well as here. And so one of the things that we taught them was the customary way of greeting one another in Thailand. It's what's known as it's called the Y, W-A-Y. And it basically is this. There's kind of this slight bow that you give. You press your palms together in this prayer-like fashion. And you say, and if you're a woman, you say, do you remember? It's my in-laws. They were with us for a little bit. So if you're a woman, you say, Sawadika. And if you're a man, you say, Sawadikap. Or if you're my son, you say, so what de crap? And so what de crap? It's a good way to remember it, right? But if you say it really fast, they don't know you're saying it. So it works out good. But anyway, no, our children, they really got it down well. But here's my point in this. It's such a beautiful way that the Thai people greet each other. And it originates from what's called the Anjali Mudra. It's like the Indian namaste. Have you heard of that phrase, namaste? Namaste, if you know anything about this phrase, namaste, you'll know that it's way more than just a greeting. It's not just a greeting. It's so much deeper than that. It's really more of an affirmation, an acknowledgement. It means looking past the labels and the differences and the appearances of others to see and to affirm their true identity, right? In some ways, it's like saying, okay, all the goodness and beauty of who I am acknowledges and sees the goodness and beauty of who you are. The divine spark in me acknowledges the divine spark in you. In some ways, it's like you could say that it's an invitation, it's a calling to embrace who you are and to awaken others to who they are. I believe Jesus was a master at this. And calling out and affirming the truth of a person's goodness and beauty and seeing into their true humanity. So many great examples. I mean, the woman who was caught in adultery. I mean, Jesus was challenging all those people who were standing with stones in their hand, and Jesus challenges them, and he says, take a look at your own life, all right? And before casting your stones of shame and guilt, take a look at yourself. And what does Jesus say? He says, where did they go? They took off. They dropped their stones and left. And Jesus says, neither do I condemn you. Now go and be free from this life of sin. so many examples. The Samaritan woman at the well. I mean, do you know many of us, we would have seen the labels all over, right? I mean, Jesus could have so easily gotten stuck on the fact this is a woman, this is a Samaritan, and she is a little bit loose. She's not someone I should be talking to. But he saw beyond that. He saw the beauty and the goodness of her humanity. He saw her potential. He saw her true self. And what did he do? He affirmed that, right? He affirmed her goodness and beauty. He affirmed her as a creation of his Father. See, that's why as a community, it's the beauty and goodness of a person's humanity, okay? A humanity that has been created in the image of our Creator. That must be our starting point with people. That must be our starting point for how we look and view other people. Listen, I don't have to affirm all of the decisions that each one of you make in your life or the people who walk in these doors. I don't have to affirm all their decisions, all your choices, but I do need to affirm. And what God has shown us, I think, so clearly is that what we do need to affirm is the beauty of a person's humanity, the goodness that is within them, and the recognition that you are loved, that you are valuable, and that God looks at you and he says the same thing he said when he looked at his creation in Genesis 1. This is very good. And that's why as a church, we must always be a place that I think is more known for the things we're for than by the things we're against. We've got to be people who are looking for what's right in the world. Does it mean we don't address things that are wrong in the world, or we don't take a stand for things like oppression or injustice or whatever it might be? Of course we stand for those things. But for the most part, the church really has done a much better job at pointing out all the things that they're against. And I think we have to change that. And so we've got to be people who are looking for what's right. You have to be a person who's looking for what's right with the world and who is celebrating and who is affirming and who is blessing those things. Can you imagine what that would do? I mean, you begin to build a vision of possibility, right? You begin to see things that are ordinary suddenly become extraordinary. And you know, I got to say, like, I see this happening in this community. So many places and so many people's lives, just blows my mind. Some of you, you know, I was thinking about Tammy. I don't think she's here today, but Tammy Helfrich, she started a blog, and the whole purpose of her blog was to tell stories of goodness and beauty and steps of faith and obedience that people are taking in their life. I love that. Facebook, it's such an opportunity. But I got to be honest, sometimes when I read what some people, even from right here in our community, are putting out on Facebook, it embarrasses me. You know, we talk about, sometimes we joke about how, you know, if you go to a restaurant, make sure you tip well. Don't tip like a dollar and then leave a church brochure sitting there. Sometimes, you know what people do, though, on Facebook? Is they'll spew their garbage, their negativity, and then they'll post something about our church right next to it. It pisses me off. Because that's not who we are. That's not who we want to be. Look, what would happen if all of us who are on Facebook, let's just say us in this room even, can you imagine like if we made it our like personal mission to intentionally use Facebook to observe and to see beauty and then when we see it, we affirm it and we celebrate it, we like it. Or when someone posts something that's really encouraging, we share that. Right? We share those things. We point it out. We like it. We link to it, right? I mean, I wonder how much of a difference just that would make. People sometimes say, well, I don't have a platform. Well, if you're on Facebook, you have a platform. If you've got two friends, if you don't have two, just true. You might not. We can help. We'll help you get another friend at least, okay? And then you can have a platform. I mean, parents, listen. Imagine finding greater and better ways to affirm and to celebrate the goodness and beauty we see in our children. I realize I don't do that nearly as much as I should. It's so freaking easy for me to point out when they're doing things that are wrong. So imagine us doing a better job with that. Like this is what we want this place to be. Spurring you towards that and helping you with that, and then turning around and we teach our kids to do the same thing, right? We teach our kids when they're at school to come home. What's one thing that you saw today that was beautiful and good? One thing. Ah, my teacher. Shh. We can hear that in a minute. One thing. It's good. Beautiful. All right. Genesis 1. We go back to that. It shows us a creator who not only beautifully creates this world and everything in it, but do you know what we also see? We see that everything God creates has the ability to create more, doesn't it? God creates the trees with the ability to create more trees. God creates animals, plants, fish, all of that with the ability to create more. God creates people, and he uniquely breathes his breath of life into humanity. He places something divine on the inside of them, creates them in his own image, and then he invites them to actually become co-creators with him in this world. And so that's why we say that we must be people who not only observe beauty and who not only affirm goodness and beauty, but we must be people who find those canvases and those people and those places who desperately need to experience our art and our beauty and our goodness that we bring into this world. We're called to be creators of goodness and beauty. Now, that's where a lot of us get snagged because so many of us, where do we go in our minds? We say, well, I'm not creative. I'm not an artist. Are you sure? You used to believe you are. When you were a little kid, you were an annoying artist, right, to your parents probably sometimes. And you know, you were very unashamed about your art and being creative, and you had no problem sharing that with the world, right? But then, somehow, over time, we start to convince ourselves, or we listen to the wrong voices that convince us and tell us that we are not creative. And so we start to believe it. It's not true. If you think about it, you're forced to be creative all the time. Parents, you're forced to be creative. Right? When they shut down the roads for 15 years around here, thank God Orchard Road's open again. Can I get an amen on that? Prairie, praise the Lord. But when they're closed, what do? You got to get creative. You got to find a way. You got to make a meal. You're missing some ingredients. What do? You improvise. Hello, Miles Davis. See, we're wired to be creative. The problem is we tend to identify creativity as something that comes from those who maybe they've had their songs recorded, or they've had their poems published, or they dance on Broadway or whatever. When the truth is, listen, 99% of creativity has nothing to do with those things. I mean, in the end, creativity is not about public recognition. It's not about some outstanding achievement. It has a lot, listen, creativity has a lot more to do with how you do the everyday things that you do, whatever those are, right? How you even do simple things like gardening, sewing, raising children, baking bread, teaching, coaching a team. What is it you do? Fixing old cars, dancing in the privacy of your shower, or anything else that you love doing. Those are expressions of creativity. And so, you know, this phrase I've used before, Roy Simmons, he has this phrase called artists who can't draw. I think that's probably just a lot of us, right? Sometimes we think being creative means we've got to have the perfect space or the perfect environment, okay? But you want to know something? Seldom do artists have all the stuff they really wish they had before they start creating. Emily Dickinson, like her room was like, what, 17 by 17? That's all the space you need to change and influence culture. There's a woman in our church. She was here last night. Her name is Mary Rodriguez. And Mary's awesome. She's a photographer, and she just recently had her work displayed and framed and displayed at the Aurora Art Walk, and she ended up winning an award, which gave her the opportunity to display her photography at the Paramount. It's on display right now. And I got to tell you, when I was at the Art Walk, I saw Mary, and I was so proud of her. And she was holding in her hand this camera. She said, hey, can I get a picture with you here? And I said, sure. And she had this little camera, this little point-and-shoot piece of junk camera, pretty much. And I looked at that, and I said, that's not what... Do you use that camera to take these photos? She says, yeah. Whoa. How awesome is that? You know what that spoke to me of? That spoke to me that... See, most people, they would wait, right? I got to wait till I have my nice Canon. I got to wait till I have this or that. You know what she did? She looked and said, what's in my hand now? What can I use now to create? And she said, you know what she said to me? She said, it's not really about the camera, Scott. It's really about your eye and how you see things. And so she just took some photos. She framed them. See, we look at someone like that, and we think, well, they must have the best camera, they must have a lot of money, they must have this or that. She made it work. I think as followers of Jesus, we ought to be some of the most creative people in this world. Because I think creativity is a natural result of spirituality. I mean, our most spiritual self is our most imaginative self. It's our most creative self. Let me tell you, the reason we want to be creative at the Orchard is not just so that you can come in here and consume that creativity. The reason we believe we must be creative in all that we do is to provoke you and to inspire you. And that's why we're always going to push you, and we're always going to challenge you, and we're always going to challenge you to take some really uncomfortable steps in your life. I'm really thankful for our artists here because they help inspire us to do that. Right? They help us to see the beauty that is all around us. Man, that stir us up, and as they embrace their canvas, it stirs us up to embrace our own. So I want to take a second. I want us to recognize all of the artists here at the Orchard who bring that goodness and beauty to us. Can we do that? See, what they do is they help us to understand that your life, my life, that's our greatest work of art. Now, we're going to close today by gathering around the Lord's table. And I want to show you one more image on the screens right now. This is one that you're all familiar with in some way. Here's the deal. I think as Christians, we ought to be pretty good at finding beauty in the midst of brokenness. I mean, that is a major component of our faith. Hello? Right? I mean, just like a lot of art, even just this image right here, that image is very, the cross, right, is very paradoxical. It's like on one hand, it's an image of pain and of brokenness, and to many, it's an image of failure, of loss. To others, though, to us as Christians, it is an image of beauty, of redemption, of healing, of forgiveness, and of mercy. The prophet Isaiah said it this way: he was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten. Images of pain and suffering. But then he continues, so we could be whole. He was whipped so we could be healed.